Hello, book nerds. This is Annabelle Crabb. This is the day on which I take Sydney Writers Festival director Michaela Maguire prisoner in a sound booth because she's just unveiled the lineup for the 2020 Sydney Writers Festival, which will be running from, give me those dates, Michaela.
27th of April to the 3rd of May.
Thank you for agreeing to be confined into this
a pleasure
intimate space with me, because this unveiling of the program is like the unwrapping of the greatest Christmas present ever. So tell me what the theme is this year. I mean, to be clear, I already know, but for the benefit of our
for those
viewers
who do not know,
who may be less at the bleeding edge than I am, unthinkable though that is, what's the theme?
The theme for this year's festival is Almost Midnight.
Right. See, to me, that immediately says the appropriate time to start thinking about tomorrow's deadline.
Yes.
But I know that not everybody who isn't a journalist will
No,
share.
And certainly not of those of us festival directors who work more than a year in advance.
Oh, I know. I know. I wasn't chipping you about your organisational skills because they're outstanding. What does it mean? What are you evoking Almost Midnight apart from a sense of panic?
We wanted the theme to be broad, but we have to settle on the theme around October or November every year. So it's a little bit of a guessing game and sort of just really carefully taking the temperature of what's going on at the moment in the world and what people are likely to be going to want to talk about in 6 months' time. And the more I looked at the literature and the more I paid attention to the climate strikes that were happening all across the country and around the world in October, it just didn't seem possible to me that anyone was going to want to have a serious conversation about anything other than the impending apocalypse.
Right. So to be absolutely clear, did you decide on this before any bushfires started burning across Australia last year?
Before the major ones, yeah. So early October.
Okay. Because you do, as a director, have a slight reputation for prescience, and this does seem to seems to have foreseen a bit of a sense of national
emergency.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might try and pick something really happy next year, just something that would ensure that we all have a great time in the subsequent year.
Next year's theme is, and then I woke up and it was all a dream.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll take that. But yeah, it was just coming out in so many of the books that I was reading and
right.
So many of the articles that I was seeing online. And there just seems to be a growing chorus of writers who are quite terrified but also really galvanized about the moment that we find ourselves living in. And the thing that we always really like to talk about at Sydney Writers Festival is it's a whole week of events. There's hundreds and hundreds of events, but they're all framed around something. And we really like hearing about the fact that people are lining up for coffee and having a chat with the people in line ahead of them before sessions, talking about what they've just seen before, what they've seen afterwards. And I think that conversation really feeds in. And so we want it to be an overarching narrative.
One thing that you do that's very unique at Sydney Writers Festival is you have this opening night address where you bring together radically different interpretations from brilliant writers. And it's an extraordinary night of entertainment. Tell me about your opening night writers for 2020.
I'm really excited about them every year, but this year I'm particularly excited. So Bernardine Evaristo, who won the Booker Prize last year for her extraordinary polyphonic novel Girl, Woman, Other, is going to be opening the festival. And yeah, I just couldn't be happier that she's joining us. It's such a remarkable book and we're so lucky to have her with us.
That was a squeal of excitement from my end because I normally leave a few years before I read the Booker Prize winner. I don't know why that
just
is.
Let it settle in.
I just think, can it really be that good? And then I read it and it's great. And then I bore my friends about it because they already knew that it was good. But anyway, I just finished reading it and it's absolutely prodigious and funny and generous and sprawling and compelling and structured in what seems like kind of a conversational way, but ultimately turns out to be quite disciplined. She's an extraordinary writer, and you have you've got a pattern going now where you book the bookers. I mean, do you just organise who's going to win the Booker Prize and then make sure they come to the festival? Or
No, not exactly. I do pay attention to it, and this year, this is going to make me sound like I go to Pilates all the time. I do not go to Pilates all the time. I go to Pilates 6 times a year and I talk about it all the time. But I had a Pilates class scheduled for when I knew the Booker Prize would be announced between 7 and 8 o'clock on a Thursday morning. And normally I would be at home by my laptop waiting for the announcement with emails preloaded, ready to go to send to anyone who I didn't already have on the lineup. And this year I just thought, Either it's going to be Margaret Atwood, and we won't get her because she was just in Sydney, and so that doesn't matter, or it'll be Bernardine Evaristo, and we've already got her, so it'll be fine. So I went to Pilates, and then, yeah, when I opened my locker and got my phone out, I was just so smug.
Yeah, you would have been unbearable that day, not just because of the Pilates. Well, well done.
Thanks.
Tell me the next person, because I know who the next person is and I'm pretty excited.
Alison Whittaker, a Gomeroi poet and legal researcher. Alison won a few awards for her incredible work, Black Work, 2 years ago. Alison was also guest curating the festival this year. And has just put together the most extraordinary stream of events. And when she let me know what she was thinking about and the ways that she was engaging with the theme of Almost Midnight, I just thought, you know, you need to be part of that conversation from the very start and on the opening night podium. And she is a very, very busy person, but she very happily agreed to, well.
That's a huge amount of work that she's agreed to take on for the festival, right?
I mean, yeah, it's enormous and I feel quite guilty about it, but also I'm just so delighted that she's doing it.
Because she's doing a session too about kind of around the theme of Almost Midnight, isn't she?
Yeah, she's doing a couple. So one of her events is called Hopeless and the other one is called After the Apocalypse. So she is examining in her events about what it means to be after midnight, both for the climate and for each other.
Okay. And the other, you've got Bernardine Evaristo doing a session too on the future of Black Britain and Europe, which is an incredibly topical area. Can you tell me a bit about who else is involved in that one?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a real festival highlight. It's on the Sunday of the festival, and I think plenty of people are going to want to stick around for this. So Bernardine is being joined by Johnny Pitts, who's a documentary maker and a photographer and a broadcast journalist who's written the most amazing book called Afropean, Notes from Black Europe. It's a huge whopping tome of a book with lots of beautiful photographs throughout. But Johnny talks about the way that Black Britain and Europe is quite uncomfortable with the term black, or a lot of people are. So he's come up with this new term, Afropean, which he thinks is more accurate and people are more comfortable with.
Well, in France, they don't even record people's ethnicity, right? Like it's actually, it's offensive to even record yourself as being of any ethnicity, which is completely extraordinary to our ears, I guess.
Mm. And then we've got the journalist and playwright Bim Adewunmi, who's also a co-host of a Slate podcast. I'll get to that a little bit later. and then the Guardian UK writer Nesreen Malik, who's written an amazing book called We Need New Stories, where she challenges the toxic myths behind our age of discontent.
So that's the future of Black Britain and Europe. Absolutely high on my list for this festival, which is becoming a longer and longer list the more that I read. Now, I just finished, this is a little bit of prescience on my part, I just finished Kevin Wilson's book, which is the craziest, most wonderful book, Nothing to See Here, it's called, and it's about a woman who goes to babysit the stepchildren of a friend of hers. These twin children are difficult in that they burst into flame when they're under stress.
Yeah.
It's just the most completely bonkers premise for a novel.
But it works so well.
It really
does. And
it's
so funny. And the voice of that narrator is just, I don't know, she's just such a hilarious slacker and just doesn't really care. But of course she ends up being the perfect person to calm these children down and to work with them. But yeah, I came across that book because
it's the craziest book I've read this year. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Taffy Broaddus-Ackner, who wrote Flashman Is in Trouble, gave that book an amazing blurb. She talked about the fact that she read it at a really inopportune time when she was writing her own book and how she just really wanted to throw her book out the window.
That's terrible. That must be a real danger, mustn't it?
Mm.
Never read excellent books while you're trying to write one.
Yes. But as it turns out, Kevin Wilson is really good friends with Ann Patchett. They've known each other for 20 years. He actually dedicated that book to her, which I was very pleased when I opened it to see.
Wow.
So they're going to have an event. Well, they're going to have a conversation with friends. That's what we're calling it. The two of them are going to sit down for an hour and talk about their writing lives, the way that they support each other through their writing, what they both like to read. I think it'll just be a most extraordinary and intimate glimpse into these two fantastic writers that we're quite privileged to be able to peek into.
Right. That's a full eavesdropping session,
yeah.
Right? That's brilliant. Now, you've got Siri Hustvedt coming to the festival, which will occasion some squeals of delight,
yeah.
I imagine.
I've been trying to get her to be involved in the festival for a very long time. I actually also got her to be my reference for the job.
Did you?
Yeah.
Clang.
So I've been bothering her about Sydney Writers Festival for quite a long time. So I felt, you know, have to finally pull through on this and get her here. But Siri is coming to talk about her extensive body of work, which includes What I Loved and The Summer Without Men, and her most recent book, Memories of the Future, which plays really neatly with the concepts of memory and time, which also plays very nicely with our theme. So she'll be interviewed by Sarah Kanofsky at City Recital Hall.
Oh, excellent. Now, tell us about Nell Zink, because I've not read Nell Zink, but I know that she is an absolute up-there hero of yours.
Yeah, I think everyone's come to Nell Zink only in the last couple of years because she published her first novel at the age of 50 and she's put out 4 in the 5 years since then. She wasn't really involved in the writing scene. She had a grungy music...
She was a music journalist.
Yeah,
wasn't she?
Yeah, she had a music...
She had a fanzine or something like that.
A grunge music magazine in New York in the 90s. She's worked in masonry as a cocktail waitress, and I think she mostly works as a translator. She lives a couple of hours outside of Berlin in a town with an excellent name, which is Bad Belzig.
Oh, wow.
So she's sort of...
good Belzig, so...
So Nell Zink from Bad Belzig, she sort of sounds like this made-up cartoon character,
yeah.
But she's a phenomenal... sharp, astute, withering novelist. And when she did come out of nowhere, there was a theory going around for a long time that she was Jonathan Franzen because got in touch with her. Well, she got in touch with him, actually. She emailed him quite a lot about birding, which they share a common interest in. She ended up sending him half a draft of a novel that she did in 4 days for 10-hour stints, and then he helped her get it published. But because no one had ever heard of her and because she is so smart and erudite and just has this amazing tone on the page, people thought, oh, well, this is Franzen having us on. Like, he's taken on a nom de plume. But no, Nell Zink is real, and she's going to be at the festival. She's doing the closing night address, which I'm really, really excited about. And she's also talking about her new novel, Doxology.
Okay, so there's so much to take from your account there, and one of them is an urgent note for me to read as many of those 5 books as I can before the festival, because there's nothing worse than that feeling of attending a really great session and thinking, wow, this person's amazing, and you would have enjoyed it slightly more if you'd read those books. I mean, the burn of shame that you feel, you know, at the end of those sessions, you know, you can avoid it. There's still time. Also, I think Nell Zink is a very, very valuable reminder that if you have the opportunity to open a correspondence with a very established writer about some obscure hobby that you have in common, run, don't walk. Definitely do that. Now, I am also massively excited, and I don't know if I'm jumping down your list of things to talk about, but like many, many, many other people, last year I read and was absolutely glued to Three Women by Lisa Tadeo.
Yes, Lisa Tadeo is coming to talk about Three Women, which was probably the biggest nonfiction book of last year that everyone was talking about. It's an amazing... sort of seems like distinctly American mode of nonfiction journalism where they just immerse themselves in one topic for a decade.
Well, she went and observed three women, not famous women, not remarkable women, and lived in close proximity to those women for months at a time over 8 years, interviewing them, talking to their friends, seeing how they lived and writing a closely observed account of their lives and their desires, and it's just, I've never read anything like it. It's quite extraordinary.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the behind the scenes. I most desperately want to know what sort of disclosure agreements did everyone sign.
Well, also, how many women did she start off with? Like, did it start off being 6 women and then, because like any documentary that you make, I mean, this is like a written documentary, right? Things change over.
Yeah, I think she had 10 serious contenders at one point, but that would have been quite early on. But yeah, I'm just desperate to know everything about how she went about this.
Yes, I'd like to hear everything about it too. Should we divert into cooking for 2 seconds?
Sure.
Just because, you know, I'm nominally directing this conversation. You've got a cookbook writer who's massively influential around the globe, and much like Ottolenghi, has kind of changed the way people cook in their homes.
Anna Jones has also changed the way that people cook in their homes.
Yeah,
Everyone I know seems to have at least 3 of her books. So I've sort of been aware of her for about the past 6 years, which probably means she's been influential for at least the past 10, I would say.
what do you mean?
But she's just such an incredible cook. These recipes are simple, everyday recipes for busy people who need to be able to cook something on a Sunday night that will last them for a few days, or, you know, a meal that's on the table in 15 minutes. And she lays this out really carefully in all of her books. But it's all great, amazing vegetarian food that is easily made vegan. And the new book, which sadly won't be out quite yet at the festival, but she'll certainly be here to talk about it, is called One, The Only Way to Cook for You, Your Family and the Planet.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, there's plenty of her books to be going on with, even if you can't quite get your hands on One. Colin McCann.
Yes. So Colin is making his first trip to Australia in 20 years.
Wow.
I think he was last here for Sydney Writers Festival 2 decades ago.
Did he just have a terrible experience? Was someone mean to him? Like, what? 20 sure. years is a long time between drinks.
You know, we are tucked away on the other side of the world. but yes, Colin's coming to talk about his new book, A Paragon, which is the title comes from a mathematical term for a shape with an infinite number of sides. This book is about two real men, an Israeli man and a Palestinian man, who Colm has interviewed extensively. And the middle part of the book is actually a transcript of a conversation between the two of them. But then he fictionalizes it out from this central point. And it's arranged into 1,001 fragments, which are numbered. So the idea behind it is that there are an infinite number of sides to every story, and he's telling 1,001 sides of this particular one.
Great. Well, I would listen to at least 1,000 of his sides. Good. So I'm very excited that you have Daniel Mendelsohn coming. Can we have a little bit of a criticism discussion? Because, you know, he is an extremely popular critic. Tell me about him.
So Daniel Mendelsohn is the editor-at-large at the New York Review of Books. He's also a past guest of the Sydney Writers Festival. He was here 5 years ago, and we're really excited about the fact that he's going to be picking up a conversation that he started with David Malouf here. The two of them are going to sit down for another chat about their deep appreciation of the classics. Daniel's new book is called The Bad Boy of Athens, and it's a collection of his criticism, looking at everything from the Greeks to Game of Thrones.
And what else have we got in terms of criticism at the you talked about Slate a minute ago.
Yes. So Slate, they'll be critiquing men that they find attractive, basically. Slate's Thirst Aid Kit, Bim Adewunmi and Nicole Perkins, will be at the festival doing a live version of their show.
Just checking you out, basically.
Yeah.
Fellas.
They're fantastic. It's a really, really excellent podcast. They're very smart and very intelligent, but it's a really nice and, I think, much needed note of just happiness and joy in amongst what can at times look like a quite serious program.
But listen, while we're talking panic, there is a lot of politics in this program, as you'd expect, I guess, because it's an unusually active time in politics around the globe. How Trumpy are we getting?
Medium Trumpy.
All right, okay. So alert but not alarmed Trumpy.
Yeah. Sort of. So we've got Carol Loenig and Philip Rucker, who are the two Pulitzer Prize winning journalists who've written a book that's just come out called A Very Stable Genius.
Which comes from a tweet of Trump's. Most things come from a tweet.
Yeah, they probably had a whole folder full of options there, but they would have been so overjoyed the day that this one was tweeted into the atmosphere. So yes, they're both coming to talk about all things Trump. Fran Kelly will be interviewing them, which we are delighted by. Moving around the globe, we've also got a session on Russia with the Soviet-born British journalist Peter Pomerantsev, teamed up with Joshua Yaffa, who is the New Yorker's Moscow correspondent.
And we're also having a bit of a look at Hong Kong, yeah?
Yeah. This will be an interesting one to see how it goes, not least logistically. So we have Joshua Wong, who is the founder of the Umbrella Movement, who cannot travel. He'll be Skyping into a session. Su Lin Wong, who's the South China correspondent for the Financial Times, is moderating the session. She hopefully will be able to join us at the festival, but it will depend on travel bans that are happening as a result of the coronavirus. And then we have Anthony Dapperan, who is an Australian lawyer who's been living in Hong Kong for about the last 20 years with his book City on Fire.
Right. So this is a panel about current events, massively influenced by current events.
Yes.
Okay.
A live conversation about what's happening in Hong Kong. We also have a session that I'm quite nerdily interested in. I think it's still going to be real. Well, we've just said it's still going to be really relevant in a couple of months' time, called Pandemic. We've got an amazing panel of health experts. The Guardian Australia's Ben Doherty is going to be talking to the global health security expert Adam Camrat-Scott from the University of Sydney. Sulin Wong, who I just spoke about from the Financial Times, mm-hmm. has been reporting live on the ground about the coronavirus and will just be an invaluable insight on the politics and the media around this event. And then we've also got Robin Davies, who's the head of the Indo-Pacific Centre for Health Security.
Wow. All right. That is comprehensively covered. Now, so we are having a bit of a look at Australian politics too, as ever.
Well, you're going to be taking quite a close look, yes. Annabelle's trying to politely segue into the fact that she's got the big interviewing job. So Annabelle will be in discussion with Malcolm Turnbull at Town Hall on Monday, the 4th of May.
Yeah, which will be the first discussion that he'll have in depth about his forthcoming memoir, which, look, it's very closely held at this point, but every indication is that it will be quite an explosive memoir.
Yeah, the speculations aren't that closely held. Most people are quite openly talking about what they're worried about talking about.
I think the copy is fairly closely held, though. So anyway, he seems very hail fellow well met about it, as you tend to become once you've left politics. Like, I always think that people who have left politics, their books become radically more interesting after that's happened. In fact, sometimes you can tell if someone is actually planning to continue their political career or not by just judging how interesting their book is. Hillary Clinton's books are case in point.
So you should get a copy of this enormous book probably just 2 weeks before the festival.
I don't know that it's
because you're going to have to read it quickly.
Yeah, well, luckily I'm a fast reader, especially when the material is compelling. So I don't foresee any major problems. There's always a few different sessions on politics. You've got Bob Brown coming along as well.
Yeah, Bob's going to talk about his latest book, Planet Earth, in conversation with Scott Ludlam, which I think will just be a lovely way to kick things off on the first Thursday of the festival.
Great. All right. And so given the theme and everybody's current very focused thought about the future of our climate and environment, what are the environmental scheduled items that you have? There's one about After the Flames, which is kind of about fire, and Bruce Pascoe's involved with that. And, of course, he's, of all of our writers, the one who's most actively been fighting fires over the summer.
Yeah, actually volunteering for the CFA. So, yes, Bruce is joining us for a couple of sessions. We're really lucky to have him. He's had to cancel a couple of festival appearances in the last few months because he has been fighting fires.
Yeah.
So he's doing a session that explores dark emu and salt, and then he's doing another one called After the Flames with Alice Bishop, the Victorian-based writer who's written a lovely book called A Constant Hum about the Black Saturday bushfires. She was living right in the middle of that community when that happened. And then Victor Stephenson, who is an Indigenous fire practitioner, and his book Fire Country is just about to come out as well.
Great. Hey, I was talking about when we were talking before about Bernardine Evaristo, I was reminded of this other panel, this other session with Danny Shapiro, because in Evaristo's book there's just this sort of lovely looping sense of time passing, of history, of inheritance, of choosing your own direction in life but still being bound loosely by those who went before. And it just fits in so nicely with Danny Shapiro's book. I wonder if you could tell us about that session for a second.
Yeah. So Danny Shapiro has written, this is her fifth memoir, and she somehow wrote...
That's a lot of memoirs, isn't it? I mean, like, we should all want to live a life sufficiently interesting to allow for five memoirs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, would Malcolm Turnbull go in for another four, do you reckon?
I'll leave
probably
that to you.
Yep. Couldn't rule it out, could you?
The prompt for Danny's fifth memoir was just taking a genetic 23andMe test on a whim. Her husband was doing it and she was like, yeah, may as well. I already know everything about my family, no problem whatsoever. And then she was really shocked to discover that the man who had raised her was not actually her biological father, which then caused her to question her entire identity, including her Jewishness. So she's had to ask all these really quite uncomfortable but revelatory questions about her own life and her own family. Jennifer Egan gave it an amazing blurb. She calls it a gripping genetic detective story and a meditation on the meaning of family and parenthood.
Yeah, I'm just writing it down right now. It's one to get definitely get through before the festival starts. Thank you. So now we talked a little bit about Alison Whittaker bringing her brilliance to the festival and kindly agreeing to do some curations as well. She's not the only writer that's agreed to perform that role. So could you tell us about some of the other curators?
Yeah, we've got three guest curators this year. Rebecca Giggs, who is an Australian writer who's been living overseas for the last couple of years, but she's originally from WA.
Mm.
Her book that she's been working on for quite a long time, which means that it is in excellent, excellent condition. Is
What do you mean? People just dash books off? Can't be good.
Rebecca's book is called Phatoms, The World in the Whale. And it all started with an essay that she wrote after a whale was beached off the coast of WA. I think probably took close to 10 years ago now. She's been compared to Rebecca Solnit for very good reason. And the series of events that she's looking at examine the spaces between animals and humans, our bodies and the world and the online and the real. And then we also have Christos Tsolkas, with his new novel Damascus. And Christos is doing some really amazing sessions. He's doing an up late session called Midnight's Children that looks at transgressive writing that maybe can only be spoken about after dark. Fiona McGregor is chairing that conversation. He'll be a panelist alongside Chrissy Neen, who's just one of Australia's most prolific sexiest authors, and Peter Polides, who has written The Pillars and previously Down the Hume. So I think that will be an amazing
great
event.
Session.
Yeah. And Christos elsewhere is talking about Journey to the End of Speech, the idea of whether free speech is something that can be contested, with David Marr, Nezreen Malik, the Guardian UK author, and Claire Lehman, who's the editor-in-chief of Quillette.
Excellent. Oh, yeah. That'll be a good session.
I think we might move on to the – a quick – note of the kids and
right. That's exactly what I was going to about to ask because I'll get seriously reprimanded by my children if I don't get you to spell out what's coming for them.
So my excellent colleague Amelia Lush, our head of children's MYA programs, she is phenomenal, and she has got Dave Pilkey.
Captain Underpants.
Captain Underpants.
Wow, that's like getting Paul McCartney, basically, right?
So he'll be doing a special performance at City Recital Hall, but also at Parramatta.
Whoa, that's excellent.
Yeah, it's a really, really big get. And then for the first time this year, All Day YA is at Carriage Works on the Saturday of the festival. So it's right at the heart of the festival. Amelia's arranged for Alice Osman and Erin Goff and Sophie Gonzalez to be part of it. And there'll also be a separate evening event with Leigh Bardugo talking about the Grishaverse. And Family Day is back as usual at Sunday in the precinct.
Okay, that'll keep me out of trouble. Thank you very much. Well, I mean, we could go on and on and on and on and on discussing the Sydney Writers Festival at some point. We have to take a break and attend it. Judging by the program, I think you've had a lot of very good feelings in the last few months. It's absolutely outstanding. And well, I'm clearing the week. So tell me and anyone who happens to be listening how we get tickets.
You can go to swf.org.au. Tickets are live now. You can also call our box office. That number is on the website, but yes, your best bet is the website. And the festival runs from the 27th of April through to the 3rd of May, but then crucially, because I would hate for someone, including most crucially, actually you, to get your diary mixed up, the event with Malcolm Turnbull and Annabelle Crabb is on the 4th of May.
It is. It's just so that it would have its own little sphere of attention.
Yes.
Think of it as the post party. Well, thank you so much to you and your great team for putting together another extraordinary festival. I absolutely can't wait. And I've got a reading list a mile long. Thank you very much for that.
Thanks.
Thanks, Michaela.